The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Preparing the Ruins, the 2015 Annual Conference Recordings, copyright 2015. If you have purchased this recording, you may make additional copies for use by your school. You may not sell copies of the recording, nor post it on the Internet. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at www.accsedu.org.
Good morning. Thank you. I think we'll get started. I think it's 11:10. Before we get started, I just want to know, is there someone out there from La Queen, Arkansas? Hello. I was in La Queen years ago at your little school. Thrilled to see you here. Well, I'm Jan Sawyer. I'm doing a class, a workshop on classroom management and communication. I work at Logos School. I've been there for 24 years as a teacher. My children have been there since the second year of Logos. They've all graduated, and now I teach their children. I'm on my 11th grandchild, teaching him how to read and sit still. That's my biggest challenge with Henry. And be quiet, Henry. I first started at Logos as a preschool teacher, and at that time, the preschool was not really connected to the school. It was mostly just Tom Garfield in charge of it, and it was so unconnected that I took off for Germany for 10 days and did not tell Tom I was going. I just got a sub and left. And when I got back, I realized it's better to ask forgiveness than permission. He should have fired me, and he didn't. That's how unconnected it was. Then I went to the kindergarten, started teaching kindergarten. I had to turn in lesson plans. And I thought, well, I need lesson plans, but why does Tom need my lesson plans? So I asked him, and he said, just in case you need a sub, you will need to know what you're doing. So I learned as I went along. Now I teach children to read, to really read. And I realized I was going to be asked questions like, how is your classroom classical? And I thought, my kids have been through classical school, they have classical Christian education. I don't know. Trivium? I'd heard of the trivium. I was a busy mom putting three children, my husband and I, through Logos. What was I going to say when people said, where do you fit in the trivium? What part of the trivium are you? So I asked Tom, where do we fit? He said, you don't. You're what comes before the trivium. That's why we are called the pre-poly. Dorothy Sayers says in her article, someone asked her what age shall the children be to enter the trivium. And she said, well, if one is to educate them on novel lines, it will be better that they should have nothing to unlearn. Besides, one cannot begin a good thing too early. We will therefore catch them young, requiring only of our pupils that they shall be able to read, write, and cipher. And that's our job. We teach them to read, write, and cipher. It used to be done at home or with tutors. Before we send them off to the trivium, it's our job to teach them to read, write, and cipher. And our teaching is best done if we do it with their characteristics. Kindergartners, little ones, are still little ones. They're little people. They hear like little people, they talk like little people, and we need to teach to them like they're little people. They're excited about learning. They still make ordinary things wonderful. Have you ever watched a little child walk along and see a pile of ants? When they're really little, they squat down and watch them. When they get a little bigger, they squish them. And when they're a little bigger, they just walk right by them. So we've had the ones that kneel down and look at them and tell you about them and explain and go on and on about little ants. They enjoy games, stories, songs, and projects. We still get to cut and paste. And that's not on a computer. It's with scissors and glue. And we still get to do that. I remember one of the first years I taught, I had a little boy come in, and his reading book was Watership Down. He's a kindergartner, and he got a chuckle out of it. But every day he would leave my kindergarten class and thank me. And sometimes he would say, thank you for letting us color and cut. I thought, what? You're reading Watership Down and you enjoy cutting and coloring? Yes, he was 5 years old. He loved it. He was grateful for it. They have very short attention spans. I have people come in the classroom that want to do a talk. My son-in-law hunts turkeys. They come in his full camo and bow and arrow and all that, and he'll say, how long shall I stay? I said, you will know when they are done. I will know. Anywhere from 7 to 10 minutes. So their attention span is short. Take advantage of it, actually. They love to pretend. I do a unit on the 7 continents, and I bring a stuffed toy. We call him, used to be Boris the Bear, and now it's Pete the Panda from China. And I tell him we're having a visitor come from the continent, and he will arrive and go stay in their homes. And I always think, some kid's going to make fun of this. Somebody's going to scoff and say, are you kidding me? It's a stuffed toy. They never have. Even the child that I think most likely is going to say, I'm not taking a stuffed bear home. Every time Pete the Panda comes out, they go, and they're so excited to take him home. So they still love to pretend, so let him pretend. Look for ways to make him pretend. When you look over your lesson plans and you look at your classrooms and you set up your classroom, remember these are little people. So Dorothy Sayers wants to remember that we are teaching them to read, write, and cipher. The Apostle Paul said, when I was a child, I spoke as a child. I thought as a child, I understood as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things, and he did, and they will. This verse is true, even if we don't take advantage of it in the way we teach these little people. They are children that talk like little kids, they understand like little kids, and they will put away childish things, but not yet. So if you're going to teach these pre-poly students, let's enjoy their childhood with them. It's fun. That's probably why you do it. I do summer hikes right after school is out. It's connected to our school summer camps. And the first trip is 4 and 5 year olds I took this year. And I just paid close attention to them on purpose. And they were excited all the way up the mountain. They talked about everything, every little flower, every bird sound, everything. Chatted, talked nonstop. The next day I took the 6 and 7 year olds and they were mostly chatting among themselves. I have to take them on a harder hike, more narrow, more straight, more up, because they're not as interested as things on the ground. They want to know what's next, what's around the corner. So it's a little different. So you can see, I could see in just 2 days how they grow out of their childish ways. As I go through this outline, please remember the principles that we cover and not the personality of this teacher. You will be different in your classroom just like I am. A couple years ago, we hired a second kindergarten teacher, really dear friend of mine, and she had taught longer than I had. She'd been teaching 34 years, but she came into my classroom to get so we could have the same classroom procedures. And after 2 days, she said, I can't do this. I can't teach like you. I'm not you. I have to be me. And she was right. So listen to the things I'm going to go over, but put yourself in your classroom. Picture yourself there. In your classroom, in classroom management, one thing I learned right away was be the boss. Gently but firmly, be the boss. You'll have some of your very own students that will want to tell you how to do something, and they'll get away with it until you make them stop. If you have that little child, how about doing it this way, or let's do it that way. No, you're the boss. You might have a room mom, an aide, or a parent that wants to be your boss. You can listen to their ideas and input, but remember, you don't have to do it their way. You are the one who will ultimately answer for the education of these students. Your name's on the report card right under the principals, and that's where it should be. And you do have an authority, and it's your administration and your school board. So remember that. When I first started teaching, I had an aide, and she was wonderful. She'd been there longer than I had, and I relied on her. But pretty soon, I heard her answering the parents' concerns and questions. And I thought, oh, no, I've done something wrong. I've let something slip that I shouldn't have. So if you're just starting out and you do have an aide, make it clear that you are going to have to be the boss. You'll love her help, but you have to be the one that answers. Be the teacher. Know your stuff. Be prepared for plan B. It will come up all the time. You'll have a parent say, I'm coming in to help. Mm-mm. They didn't show up. So have plan B. Always have something in your pocket. It's a rainy day. You thought you'd be out on a hike. No, it's pouring rain. Have plan B. Find ways. Over time, I remember when I started, the teacher before me had, I kept her lesson plans. And I read them and I studied them and I did everything she did. I tried to be her. And it helped. But over time, I found out that I could do things differently. So be prepared for that. Be their ally. Be the one that comes alongside them in the hallway and at recess. First day, I take my little kindergartners down to the third grade room and I introduce them and I say, please, third graders, take care of these little ones on the playground. You can come alongside them, not as their buddy, but as their teacher, the one that loves them, the one that has their best interest at heart, and they will learn to trust you, and that's a good thing. Okay, some rules. If they know the rules to the game, then they can play. Have you ever given two children one deck of cards? Everybody has the rules for the game. Everybody. And it's chaos. Add four kids in there, and you have four kids that want to tell you the rules. But if you give them the cards and you've told them the rules, they can play the game. We have a game at school, and I first pull it out. It's a snail game. And the first thing they want to do is grab the color they want to be. But that's not the game at all. All they do is roll the dice and move the snails. And when they understand that, it takes 1 minute. They love it. There's nobody telling someone else how to play. So remember, they need to know the rules so they can play the game. You'll have more fun. I had to laugh at my first rule, set up straight and tall, because I heard Mr. Moeller say his first day in first grade, his mom asked him what he learned. He said, just sit still. Nothing. I didn't learn anything. I thought, well, that's a student, first grade's perspective, but we're the teacher. Sit still. Know how to sit still and sit up straight and tall. I have a poster of a lion, Leo the lion, sitting up straight and tall. And it's easy for me to refer to that. Look how he's sitting. I'll just imagine I'm talking kindergarten here. So they look at the poster and it's a quick reminder. But we play games and we practice this a lot, sit up straight and tall. And then we go to the assembly. I have been saying sit up straight and tall. And Mr. Whitling says, okay, you can stand up straight and tall. Or sit up straight and tall and all my kids stand up. They just don't, it's a different atmosphere. It's a different place. It's hard for them to understand sit up straight and tall. One thing I want them to do is keep their eyes on me. When I first started teaching, I went in the classroom and the desks faced each other. The kids faced each other. And I started talking to them and no one was looking at me. I thought, this isn't going to work. So that night when they went home, I turned their desk so they were facing me. Always tell them, if I have your eyes, I have your ears. So we'll play games. I'll stand over in this corner and say, are your eyes on me? Then I'll close your eyes and stand over here. Are your eyes on me? Turn, face me. If I have your eyes, I have your ears. Raise your hand to speak. The hardest rule of all. Have you found that true? After all, where else have they had to do that? They don't do it at the dinner table. They don't do it in Sunday school. If they go to Sunday school, they don't do it. And here we require them to do it. So it's practice, 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 and lots of not doing it. Especially, well, they like to talk. It takes lots of training. I tell parents one of the best games they can play is go fish and have the kids raise their hand before they answer. And that's a quick game, and it's quick. Raise your hand, raise your hand. So it's a hard thing to do. Be kind to one another, of course. They've learned that at home. It's in your classroom. Enforce it. Or all these rules, obey right away, all the way, with a good attitude every day. It's easier to explain that to parents. Because you can say, they didn't obey right away. They didn't obey all the way. Oh, I obeyed, but real slow on my schedule. Or they obeyed with a grump, or a sad face, or a huh. So obey right away, all the way, with a good attitude every day. We have some school rules that are automatic office visits. You probably do too. Hitting somebody with an intent to hurt them. Dishonesty. That's what I see in kindergartners. It's one thing of all these they do the most is lie. They're not sure. I mean, they're learning. I always hate to see that first lie. And I'm quick to tell the parents that first sneaky lie, because it's so easily correctable if they see it at first. If a kindergartner comes in that's well-trained in lying, sometimes they don't know when the truth hits them. So we try to nip lying right away. disrespect or obscene language, you go straight to the office for that. If we do not take the time to train these children to obey these rules, then we have given them more than they can understand. And that's just not fair. We're always training. The question is, what are we training them to do? Often in my classroom, if my kids are out of order, it's my fault. Either I haven't trained them well, or I've slipped, and then I have to call them back to order. In your training, you will get more of what you subsidize and less of what you penalize. If they're doing something you like, have them do it more. And if they're doing something you don't like, make them stop. But if you're going to do that, make sure it's something that doesn't just annoy you. Make sure that if you're making them stop something, it's a rule they've actually disobeyed. If you are letting them whine or tattle or be bossy or interrupt you or play with things in their desk, you'll get more of the same if you don't make them stop. They can actually break a habit. I learned that this year. I had a little boy that had when he talked, he had this odd facial. He'd play with his mouth like this. And at first I thought, well, he can't help it. And then I thought, no, I think he can, and I think someday someone's going to make fun of him. I think we're going to work on this. So I said, when you talk and your mouth looks, I'm going to go like this to myself to remind you not to do that. Just, you don't have to go. He just had the funniest expression. And he quit. He actually quit. I didn't know if it'd work. And then I realized years ago I had a little boy that eyes blinked all the time. And I thought, I should have him stop that. There's nothing wrong with his eyes. And he's still doing it. And I should have made him stop. And I have a friend that's son had to stop a habit. And he thanked her later. He said, Mom, thank you for making me stop doing that. I realized I would have done it all my life. Things like baby talk or things you can actually make him stop. So we learned that this year. You can break a habit. When I told it, this little boy's dad that, he said, I wish my mom had known that. I wish there were some habits that she would have made me break. It would have made it easier. So remember, you can make them break a habit. If they're doing something that you like, have them do more. I love when my kids break out in song, especially around Christmas. They're working away, and all of a sudden I hear all these sweet little songs, and I think, oh, do that more. When they're studying really quiet for a long time, I just go on and on about how wonderful they are. Do you know, I'll say, you've been quiet for so long. I love it. You can do more and more of that. So if they're doing something that you like, have them do more. If they're doing something you don't like, make them quit. Remember that small sins will soon lead to bigger sins. Whining leads to discontent. Tattling stirs up strife. I tell them you cannot tattle in this classroom unless there's blood running or somebody's really hurt you. Otherwise, I don't want to hear about it. Don't want to hear that somebody took your pencil. I don't want to hear that unless it's gone on and on. You tell them to stop first. If they don't stop, tell them again. If they don't do it again, you come see me. But you can stop some things yourself. They don't need to tattle. Interrupting leads to arrogance. Bossing can lead to bullying. So make sure you're stopping some of those things. If you find yourself nagging them, Johnny, I said, sit still. I said, sit still. It's the third time I told you to sit still. It's time to nail them. It's time to put their name on the board. Tell them that you have high expectations of them. This year's class is quite a handful for me. And we were learning, if you can imagine, to line up and walk down the hall straight and quiet. We worked and worked on it. And they were all lined up, and I had to run and get something. And I came back, and they were all standing there. And I said, oh, my goodness, my expectation of you guys was this high, and you met it. You did it. And so we started using that term, my expectation. We'd line up to go to the library, and I'd say, what's my expectation of you guys? High. It's high. They knew what I expected, and I told them that when it pleased me. Now, our training like this usually takes 2 weeks, and part of the training is teaching them to escape temptation. Now, imagine they're just kindergartners. So when I tell them a way of escape for temptation, it might be as simple as playing with stuff in their desks or playing with their pencil on the top. Or here's one they do. I kept an extra glass. This. When I pass out glasses for water, try not to spill this. They go like this. And so I'll say, okay, kids, everybody take their cup out and pound it on your desk. And it's just loud. And I said, now just think if we all just put it out and left it. There's a way to just leave it. Put your hand down. I'll come around and put water in it. But I'll say, if I hear you doing this after about 2 weeks, I'm going to toss your cup. There's no water that day, and there's no drink the next day in the classroom. And they all look at me like, hmm. She mean that? Sure enough. First time after the training, I hear that knocking, I hear that playing, throw your cup away. And it never, almost never happens again. Unless they forget, that's my fault, I need to remind them. Our training, like I said, usually takes about 2 weeks. One thing that if they, like I said, if they have trouble keeping their eyes on, if they keep looking over at their neighbor's paper, imagine, they've never had to not do that before. Don't look at your neighbor's paper. So I tell them there's a place for your eyes to be. It's a wise place for your eyes. If we're taking the phonics test and you're confused about the letters, look up at the alphabet. You can always look up there. Or if nowhere else, stare at me and I'll stare right back at you. It's a wise place for your eyes. You've learned that at 5, it's easier. We like to stand up when an adult comes in the classroom. We're not required to in kindergarten, but they love it. They always like to be like the big kids. So I will go outside the door, and I'll say, pretend like I'm Mr. Whitley when I come in, and they all stand up. So it's that kind of training. We've learned to stand up and push our chair in over and over and over again. If they're restless, I'll say, let's stand up, push your chair in. Stand up, push your chair in. And then sometimes I'll say, girls, I want you to go line up, and I'll say, boys, watch and see if they push their chairs in. Or boys, you go line up. Girls, did they push their chairs in? Boys over here, girls over here, and I want them to stand up and push their chair in, because we practice and practice and practice that. Lining up, we practice first. It takes a while to know how to write your line up to go outside, because, so I don't post it right, because you don't know who's going to line up well beside somebody, so you might have to change it, and once you've got it, they're pretty stuck. But I make a line up, a sheet that actually has their names on it, and how to line up to go outside. So there's lots and lots of training. And then comes the discipline. When the training's over, they should know the rules to the game. And when the rules are disobeyed, it's time to faithfully follow through with the discipline. They will expect it, and they will be testing you to see if you really mean what you say. When you do mean what you say, then they trust you. Webster defines discipline as training that corrects, molds, or perfects moral character. A well-disciplined child or a well-disciplined class is not perfect, but it's able to gain control when obedience or order is enforced. The Bible says discipline is not pleasant at the time, but produces the fruit of righteousness. And what a goal, the fruit of righteousness. And our job is to see that they are able to produce that by disciplining them. Proverbs 2:11 says, when a scoffer is punished, the wise, though simple, is made wise, but when the wise is instructed, he receives knowledge. I looked up a scoffer. I thought, what does a scoffer look like in first grade or kindergarten? A scoffer is one who mocks or shows disrespect by his expression, roll his eyes, sigh, or a tone of voice, yeah, yes, ma'am, or sarcastically taunts, even good-naturedly. And I had one year. I had a scoffer. And it made me sad because I never saw him change. And the first time he scoffed at something, I thought, is this scoffing? Is this what it looks like? Is this disrespect? So I went and asked Matt, explained the situation. He said, I want him in here right now. If it's disrespect to you, and it's disrespect to your classroom, it's disrespect. And it made me sad for a scoffer. The naive is marked by an unaffected simplicity. They've never been in this situation. They're watching. They're watching the scoffer. They're watching the wise. They don't know what to do. The wise fears God, loves his word. And when he's instructed, he gets smarter. Wise child is looking to see if you are wise like his parents. And the naive and the wise are watching you. The naive to see which way the situation is going to turn out. And the wise to see if you are wise. So think about that when you're in a situation. You have time. You have time to think about it. How are they seeing you? How are the naive going to react for a long time? And is the wise one going to trust you? Are you going to look like his parents? Hopefully. Proverbs 19:18 says, discipline your son while there's hope. Don't set your heart on his destruction. Did you know we could do that? by not disciplining them, set their hearts on their own destruction. Your training has been for their sake as well as for your sanity. A well-disciplined class is certainly easier to work with, and they look good when you take them somewhere, but it's for their righteousness. They look impressive, but remember their obedience is going to bring them blessings from God or curses, and that's in your hands sometimes. In your training and discipline, be concerned for their souls. I think it pleases God to save children at an early age. I think it's that's the way I was saved at 5. I think it pleases him. So remember, you're working with little souls. Okay, I put down some verbal and nonverbal signs. Please, in the meantime, please be writing down questions. If I've zipped through something and you think, what did she say? How'd that work? Please write it down. I'll give you a few minutes at the end and answer some of the questions. Our verbal and nonverbal signs to facilitate classroom order. We have pink slips. Anyone in here use pink slips? Okay. I don't know how you all do it. And then after our 2 weeks of training, I will tell the children, if you disobey me, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to write your name on the board. And then if you disobey me again, I'm going to put a check. Now, the name on the board, at the end of the day, I send home a pink slip. It has the offense, their name, the offense, the date. It's in triplicate, so they get the pink one. The yellow one goes to Mr. Whitling so that he has an idea of what's come and keeps track of them. And the white one I keep. And the next day they return the pink one with their parent's signature on it. So that's our pink slip. Now, if you have wonderful parents, that pink slip is a very scary thing to the child at home. And I love that most. So if you are parents out there sending your children to school, make it a very fearful thing to get in trouble at school. It just makes it easier for them and for the school. Sometimes they have to send the student in to see Mr. Whitley because they've had their name on the board and then a check. And then if I have to speak to him again for another offense, then I take him in to see Mr. Whitley. Not an easy thing for the child or for me, but the best thing for both of us. He comes back happier, he or she, after seeing Matt. I'm not sure what he does in there. But they love him, and they go scared. And they come home with a smile, and he makes them apologize, and it's done, finished, the slate is clean. I assure them that God's mercies are new every morning, that boards are erased every night. There is no names on there when they come to school in the morning. Doesn't matter if it's been there every day or week, it's gone in the evening. The offenses are not raising their hand to speak, not working diligently, or even sloppy coloring. Now, doesn't that seem petty? I mean, seriously, but they have just disobeyed. They've trained, and now they've disobeyed. And that's simple, too. It's a name on the board. I had one child that just scribbled. And then we talked and talked about coloring the lines and talking about how you can scribble in preschool, but you got to get better in kindergarten. So I sent a pink slip home for coloring, and his mom said, what? Seems kind of ridiculous. And then she watched him color in the lines, and she said, she's right. He can color in the lines. And it wasn't coloring sloppy. It was disobeying me that mattered. It wasn't even trying. So, yes, even for sloppy coloring. Explain to the parents that they simply disobeyed you. The rule is clear. It's been practiced. They know how to play the game. And the discipline is a reminder to obey all the way. If they get too chatty in the classroom, it's often my fault. I've gotten off on something. I've lost control because I'm excited, and that's hard. And sometimes that's okay. It's just okay. It's just us and them. So sometimes that's just okay. Are they mature enough? I get that a lot. Are you disciplining for immaturity? And I do not like to do that. So I watch. Let me tell you a really good way to test that. Have your principal come in and sit beside him after 2 weeks of training. If they can sit still while he's there, they can sit still. And sometimes they can't. It's confusing to them. And then I recommend they go back to preschool for a year or stay home for a year and enjoy their mom as long as they can. But it's been a really good test. Can you imagine having Mr. Whitman sit beside you? For me, it's a really clear test. But I do not like to discipline for immaturity. Just let them grow up. Give them time. I have something in my classroom called a stoplight. Red is no talking. It's a black paper with three holes on it. Red, yellow, and green. Yellow is you can whisper. And green is recess. Or whatever. Go, go, go. It's never on green. But it's on yellow. Especially after it's been red for a while. And you will have the child. I'll put it on yellow and forget to put it back on red. And then I'll say, class, no more talking. And one will say, it's on yellow. That means chat. You can chat, but it should be on red. I put down here, look and listen, or kindergartner's eyes on me. After weeks of training, some people do a clap or something when they want attention. I've never gotten into that. I love it. I love hearing that in the instant quiet. But I just say, kindergartner's eyes on me. And that works after weeks of training. I have their attention. I forgot secret code. I put secret code in there just real quickly as a cleanup. I give them to three to clean up and put their things away. But you know what? I really don't even do that anymore. You'll find that sometimes inside something, there's a whole new set of rules. And it got to be that way. I say, okay, it's time to clean up from a craft. I'm going to count to three. This is not for obedience. It's just cleanup. Oh, the race. Run to the garbage. I was just beginning. I was like, oh, no, now I have to say, don't run. So I don't do secret code anymore. And I don't do the bathroom cards anymore either. I should take those off. That was they were hanging on the wall. If a boy, that was a game, too. Anything can become a game to them. So it's just, if you have to go to the bathroom, go. And after three little kids go, and the next one says, can I go? No. You wait. You know exactly what's going on. They want to go talk. They want to go play. And lining up, I've talked about. I do a list when we practice. Setting up your room, again, desk face the front. Have your goals in mind when you set up your classroom. I want my students to love learning by discovering things on their own as much as they can. And I hope my classroom reflects that. I hope the posters and the pictures I have up tell a story. I hope they can look at them for a very long time and see something different or tell me something about it. I want them to love the Creator and love His creation. I have a whole shelf of just natural things, bird nests, seashells, anything that looks like it's natural, it's nature. I want them to know God, and I want them to love His creation. You'll have a curriculum guide. I would advise that you not let your curriculum guide you more than the needs of your students. If you have a very bright class and you can zip through your curriculum, go, go, go. If you have a slow class and you're leaving most of them behind, slow down. If you don't get through it that year, it's all right. You've got next year. Most of all, you want them to learn. Okay, I'm going to take just a few minutes on that before I go to communication. Are there any questions on discipline or classroom structure? Okay. The communication, we do a weekly newsletter. Looks a bit like this. Tells the parents, if they read it, what we're doing. They don't. I ask them, back to school night, do you all read this? Yeah. Keep sending it. I think, did you read it? Mm-mm. I didn't see it. Anyway, we send it home faithfully every Friday. And then we have the midterm and report cards. Lots of communication with the parents. Some of you may have gone electronic. We tried that, and it looked, for kindergarten, it looked electronic. It didn't look user-friendly, so we still do the old midterms and report cards. Back to school night, know your parents, know their names, explain the classroom rules, the training and the discipline, get them on the same page with you. Remind them that this is the year of training. It's much like a two-year-old in their home when they were training them. These are five-year-olds in school. You're training them. They're learning not just to read, but how to behave in classroom structure. Encourage them to take seriously the name on the board and encourage them to be thankful for the pink slips. They don't know it yet, but you are saving them years of trouble. It's easier to discipline a 5-year-old than a 15-year-old. So tell them to be thankful. If they start that way first, then they'll start to see it differently. So if they can be thankful for a pink slip. Then we go over the daily schedule with them so they know what's going on. The parents come back to school night, go over the midterms, and tell them that they will be seeing needs work on their report card. Some of my parents were blown away by that. What does this mean? I said, they're learning. They're here. They do need work. That's why they're here. And then we talk about God's rules and house rules, because they're going to come up more than they ever have, probably in their little social lives with these five-year-olds. That's going to be the holidays, and the first one's Halloween. And you can imagine all the house rules I hear about and how they want to set everybody's house rules to be their house rules. And so I tell them that the house rule and what they do in their house is really none of your business. That's what they do at their house. But I'm telling them God's rules are something you obey and honor. And God's rules are don't steal, don't lie, honor your parents, be kind, all those. But whether you go trick-or-treating or not, that's up to the house. That's not what we do. Every home is different. What they do in their home for the holidays is up to them. And what other families do is their house rules. If they have concerns, have them come and talk to you. But remember, you will be misquoted, and so will they. Have you heard the children tell you something about your parents? You think, oh, that can't be true. Well, they hear things from us, and I think, oh, no. Is that what you heard? That's not all what I said. So just know that you will be misquoted. In your classroom, let your love of things and your love of those children limit your liberties. You can do a lot of things on your own, but in your classroom, let love limit your liberties. And then you go and tell your parents about any upcoming events, field trips, things they can be involved in. And then I send around a volunteer and wish list. Time for room moms or reading group sign up or supplies, paper plates, facts, all that kind of stuff. Then we do parent-teacher conferences, I think about 8 weeks into school. We schedule them every 15 minutes. I try very hard to get both the mom and dads. I will do whatever I can to accommodate that because I found that dads are honest and moms are defensive. So when I bring up the mama bear, it's so true. I remember a little girl that was a chronic liar. And I mentioned it. Mom goes, oh, I don't think she tells lies. And the dad goes, yes, she does. She lies all the time. So try to get both of them if you can. First of all, let those parents know that you love their child. You're going to have to talk to them about some hard things, maybe, but let them know you love that child. I remember my daughter's kindergarten teacher. She went to a public kindergarten, and I remember seeing her teacher years later across the street, and my first thought was, that lady loved my daughter. I never even thought about her teaching her to read. She was a wonderful teacher, but she loved her. And that's the one thing I remembered. So make sure they know. Tell them out loud. You love their child. And if you don't love them, thank God for them every day. Some kids are hard to love. And I found that myself on my way to school thinking, oh, no. Put up with so-and-so today. And then I think, no, I'm going to thank God before I get there. And when I do that, it goes better. When I don't, it doesn't. So thank God for a difficult children, all your children in your classroom. Things to say and not to say. What not to say? Well, just be kind. I'm going to tell you, be ready to be honest. Don't beat around the bush. You may never have another opportunity to say what needs to be said. So be prepared. Be prepared with scriptures. You don't want to jump into their home and life like you wish you could and say, what are you doing? I'm old. I have hindsight. I know where you're headed. I can't say that unless they ask me. But I can be prepared with scripture, with suggestions of good books, good people to go see, good people to get input from. So be prepared without jumping on them. Begin with something positive about their child. I usually ask them, here's an open door in case I have to say something. I will say, tell me what your child's like at home. And they'll tell me, and then I can say, that's exactly what I see in the classroom, or that surprises me, because this is what I'm seeing. So I've already got their perspective, and now I'm giving mine. And sometimes it's just exactly the same. Sometimes it's so different, we can't believe we're talking about the same child. I often say, how can I best reinforce in my classroom what you're trying to accomplish at home? A question that makes them think, what am I doing at home? Is there certain manners that you are teaching them that I can enforce in the classroom? Is there certain language? Some parents want their children to say, yes, ma'am. And if they want that, I want to do that. I want to encourage that. If there's something academic they're working on, of course we're going to work on be together. If they bring up a concern or you say you're going to work on something with their child, write it down. And when you talk to them again, make sure you've been doing it. They're watching you to see if you really are going to be concerned about the things that you tell them you are, and do be concerned about them. Often I recommend, I am surprised at how many kids can't do three things in a row, and I'm surprised that the parents would think they should be able to. So often I will say, give them three tasks to do without reminding them. Just three things. Maybe run upstairs, put on your pajamas, and put a toy on the pillow. Just three things. See if they can do that. And then cheer for them or have them. Just encourage them to get three things. Be able to do three things. I also suggest the Go Fish game. Learn how to raise your hand. Or just play an obedience game. Let's play a game, kids. I'm going to say, run to the corner. I'm going to give you some commands, and we're going to see if you obey them. They can make a game out of it. Be ready to give them insights and observations you see in their child. Personality traits or social skills. I know one year I had a little girl that had no friends. She wasn't very kind. And her parents asked me, and they always ask you about their social life far, far more than their academics. And I didn't quite know what to say. I didn't know how to say. She didn't have any friends. She's hard to be around. And that was tricky. But they want to know, so be prepared to tell them what their child's like. Sometimes it helps me to use terms, the Winnie the Pooh characters. You have Tiggers, you have Poohs, you have Piglets, you have an Eeyore. And they understand that. As soon as you say, oh, wow, your child is a little Tigger. Uh-huh. Bouncing everywhere. Eeyore. Yeah. So sometimes those terms help. Again, be ready to recommend some good scriptures or some good advice. You probably are older than them. Have samples of work on their kids' work on hand. I usually put up a bulletin board with the last spelling test, because they're going, I actually had a parent ask me, where's my child placed in the classroom academically? And I thought, whoa, what should I say? They're at the bottom? I don't know how to say that. So I put tests up so they can look. They can compare without asking me. And usually they know. If a parent asks me that question, they usually know they're struggling. I usually tell them, they'll want to know about the progress their child is making or where they're headed. And sometimes it's hard for them to believe you. Now, just imagine, you look at five-year-olds for 10 years, you've studied 50 to 100 to 200 five-year-olds. They've seen one. You've seen those 20 five-year-olds grow into 15-year-olds. You do have something to say if they will listen. You have experience. And I always say to them, my husband teaches driver's ed, and I will say, someday your child's going to drive, be in a driver's ed car. And my husband says the hardest children to teach are the most cautious ones. Actually, they are. They cause the most accidents. And I remind parents, let your kids make mistakes. Let them learn from the mistakes while they're 5 or 6 or 7. Because when they're too cautious and afraid to do something, they're a danger. Get them out there. Give them some experience. I also, and then you'll have the parents that want their kids to excel. It's your brightest kid that's ever been through kindergarten, and you think, oh, I don't think so, but they do. And sometimes I'll say to them, they're pushing them, do you want your child to graduate at 17 and go to college at 17? Are you ready to let them go? If they go clear across the United States, they got accepted to a school and they're 17 years old, are you ready for that? Oh, often, they haven't even thought that far. No, some of them know that's not going to work. Slow down a little bit. Slow down. They're okay at 18 and 19 graduating. If they're great at 17, go, go, go. But just think about it, too. Okay, folks, that's my outline. Do you have any questions? Yes. Yeah. Oh, my. Listen to the parents. They probably have experience. Young teachers, I would say find a mentor. Find somebody that's taught, that's a little bit older. If you have that on your staff, listen to your administration. Ask questions. Be glad for their evaluation. Take their criticism. Trying to think of our young. Okay, a lot of younger teachers, actually. No, they're not younger than their students. That would be my advice. Find a mentor. Any other questions? Yes. But you know, I do have some consequences. A name on the board. I could take 5 minutes away from recess, or have them 5 minutes out of PE is like death. I was telling some teachers yesterday, if you say you're going to have to stay in for recess, there you go, you've got them for another 15 minutes. They could have been outside. So I don't do that very often, but you can take away things. When we do stations, it's time they get most rowdy. You know, it's more, it seems play to them. They're actually learning. Sometimes they're just playing. I will say you have to miss out. If they're rowdy during special, it's okay, in your seat, head down, you miss out. Oh, they do not like to miss out. So some of those things. But the name on the board would be a pink slip at home. But, yeah, I know what you're saying. There's some things that I can immediately do. It's usually take away a privilege. Yeah.
Sorry,
yes. Oh, I see. Yes. Dealing with parents. I've dealt with teachers there, the teachers' kids. Yeah. How do you mean, what do you want to deal with them on? Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the best thing maybe you could do is ask for their advice on some things. Get them to be a partner. And then, I'm trying to think. You must be having difficulty with someone. Do you?
No.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. Yeah, I would say ask for their input. They're older and wiser. Ask for the input. It doesn't mean you have to take it, but I think it's nice to honor them and ask them. Does that answer your question? Does it? Yes. I know I used to do it where they, some people do a tech, they're on a train. That's how the classroom is set up. When I got in there, you could get on the train. You had to go back to the caboose, but you could move forward. Oh, no, they loved it. It was a game. It became a game. So, no, the name's on the board. That's why the 2 weeks of training, to tell you the truth. I'm not just going to turn around and put their name on the board. No, no, no. We're going to work and work, and I'm going to make sure they understand. Now, there's some kids you know are going to just test you. But, yeah, no, it's lots of work. Yeah. Oh, no, no, no. The board's clean. God's mercies are new every morning. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yes. When I'm talking about the curriculum as far as not setting a pace, it would be more the sciences and the fun things that I'm going to leave out. If we're falling behind in phonics, oh no, we're going to double up. We're going to double up. If I'm going to let the curriculum not set my pace, it's going to be the fun things. And when I give an account to Matt at the end of the school year and he asks, how did you do in following your goals, I often have to say the ones I gave up were the most fun. It's never the math and the... Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes, I know what you're saying. Well, first of all, you're the teacher. They should listen to you. But if they're not, again, I would ask them for advice. It's okay. It's okay to say, well, then when this situation, what could I do? But the questions that I ask, what's your child like at home? Give them an opportunity for them to tell you honestly what they're dealing with at home. Now, you're the teacher, so you can say to them, that's not what I'm seeing in the classroom. This is what I'm seeing. What can we do about it? Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is what you can say. Disobedience is disobedience. Doesn't matter if you're 5 or 15. That's what I said, and you didn't obey, and it's disobedience, whether you're a boy or a girl. Does that help? Yeah. Anything else? Thank you for coming. I'll be around. I'll be around. If you see me and have a question, please come interrupt me. I'll love it. Thank you.